Okay, welcome to the class tonight. We are picking up where we left off on our Known of God series of classes. And I'm thinking, now I'm not sure, it depends on how this goes, I'm thinking this may be the last, class of this series. I want to get into a couple of verses tonight that's been on my heart to really bring this to a conclusion and to demonstrate what I mean by not only the knowing of God or being known of God, but what it means to know even as we are known. To me, these two verses have become synonymous, and most people define them in, well, I guess they don't, but they define them in two different ways, and I've never been able to, I guess because of all that previous or the preconceived ideas I had with both of these verses that we'll look at, I could not see the correlation between them. But now, thank God, I'm able to see that they are saying the same thing, declaring the same reality, and in my heart it has to do with what we've been talking about. God's knowing with regard to us, the securing of a relationship with God, or let's say this way, a relationship with God that is secured in a way that is not referenced to us. It is not secured by us. It is not defined in us. It is not measured in us. It is defined in the person and presence of another. But the grace of God is that that other one, that another, is our life and is in us, made unto us all that he is unto the Father. And that is the certainty of our relationship. And we've talked about that. I think in the last class we talked about the word known, that's in the phrase known of God. And one of the translations talks about a continuity of relationship. And I jotted that down, a continuity of relationship. And we'll get into this as we go, but just to start this off, it implies a continuity of relationship. And the word continuity means a quality of something that does not stop or change. It is continuous, something that is the same always, similar in two or more things and provides a connection between them. But this is the thing. It does not stop and it does not change and it is always the same. And I asked the question the last time, is that your comprehension, your soul's comprehension of your salvation? Now, first of all, I will say this. Regardless of your present comprehension, the continuity of your relationship with God is a reality. Because what makes it an unstoppable, unbreakable, unchangeable fellowship, the thing that secures it is that it is not secured in you, by you. It is not dependent upon you in any way because it is eternally secured in a fellowship that existed before you did. And this is what I've been driving home in all of these classes. And to bring it to the conclusion, I want you to at least walk away with that understanding, scripturally anyway, because the understanding only truly comes in the face of the Son, who is the certainty of our salvation and the security of our relationship with God. But I want to at least be able to present to you in these classes the fact that your salvation and your soul's relation to God, or better said, the God's relation to your soul, is secured in the person of His Son who is in you. It is not secured by you. It is established in an eternal fellowship, that is governed by an eternal covenant. So, is that the type of relationship you are presently experiencing? Because religion places hindrances in our way because they premise God's relationship to us upon outward alignments that we are to bring about, external observance, adherence, and your doing that or not doing that determines how sure your relationship to God is. I'm telling you, if that was the measure of our relationship to God, no one would have a certain and sure relationship with God. No, it has to be secured in another. It has to be secured, if you'll get this reference, afar off from us. Remember, the Ark of the Covenant, afar off, 2,000 cubits. And they had to see the Ark of the Covenant to go, to be able to go into the land, but it was afar off for them. In other words, the securing of the land and their coming into the land was according to their view of one who was not close to them. That your salvation is not centered in you. It is defined in another. It is defined in the person and presence of another man. And we see that with the high priest, and we're going to talk about that as well. A hidden reality that is not hidden to the sight of God, but may be hidden to the sight of your soul or the faculties of your heart. But nevertheless, his presence in the sight of God secures a soul, even in the midst of its ignorance. It's one thing, I was talking to someone recently, and we were talking about prayer. And as we were talking, the Lord began to deal with my heart about a verse of scripture, and we'll get into this in a second. I think this has some relation to what we're going to say. But there, in Romans 8, and Paul, the context is really important here in the verses that we'll talk about. In Romans 8, you know, he has come from the context of Romans 7 of a man under the law struggling to fulfill the law when he is not the one of whom the law testifies. He's trying to apply a spiritual law or a law with spiritual intention to himself. And that is not going to bring about the desired result. The law was a testimony of one. And then bringing about in chapter 8, law of the spirit of life, he is set free from the law of sin and death that was in his members. Now he realizes the righteousness of the law, now not fulfilled by him as he desired and as he attempted, but fulfilled in him by the presence of Christ. But then if you go down, and that's the context, and then we talk about the praying that when we know not how or what we ought to pray, the Spirit of God helps our infirmities with groanings that cannot be uttered. And the Lord began to deal with me about that, and has everything to do with this, secured in a reality even in the midst of our ignorance. That even when we're ignorant to a state of being that is settled because of the presence of the Son, and we may still be struggling under the assumption that righteousness is an achievement that is to be achieved by us. When we are ignorant of our state of being, ignorant of reality, and we cannot pray in faith, the Spirit of God overrides our ignorance and secures our state of being in the midst of our ignorance. You understand? That is the helping that he brings about. He is there. This is the Spirit of the Son in us crying, Abba, Father. That has taken place. That has been so since the moment you were born again. The Spirit of him, the Spirit of adoption, the Spirit of the Son bringing into your soul a perfect fellowship A perfect relationship with God that is secured by His presence. Whether you're ignorant of it or not, because we have all been ignorant of that. Some still are ignorant of that. Most are ignorant of it. But the fact remains, the anchor of the soul has not moved. So in the midst of our ignorance, the Spirit of truth, who works upon the basis of truth, secures us. And is the securing element and factor with regard to our state of being. But He works in our hearts to unveil our soul to that state of being. How does He do that? He reveals Christ as the state of being, as our relation to God. He's not praying for you that you'll get better. That is not the intercession that the Spirit brings about. That's not the intercession that that Christ, He ever liveth to make intercession. What is the intercession? Because it's the same. It's the intercession of the Spirit of truth. It's the intercession that the living Christ brings about. What is that intercession? It is defined in the fact He ever liveth. It is in the context of the one who stands in the Holy of Holies. He stands there as our life. He stands there as the only righteousness that God accepts and recognizes. And He is there as the intercession for your soul. He stands there as the securing anchor for your soul. Even in the midst of ignorance, the truth remains. Reality is secure. And that's what I've been trying to say in all of these classes. And we've seen many examples. We've even seen examples of that which is in the heart of man that rebels against such a security, because that security is found in another man and not in ourselves. Remember, we looked at Korah and looked at Adonijah and the desire that's in man to have the place that belongs only to Christ. To stand before God when that right belongs to only one. So in the context of that, I want to point out a couple of portions of Scripture to you that you may have not considered in the light of these classes. One will be a little more familiar to you than others in this context. Maybe both if you've considered it. Most people probably have and I haven't. And it's this. Chapter 3 of Colossians. Now I know this is familiar to those of you who listen to these classes and listen to all of our classes here. These verses are like ABC to you. But I want to point something out. And I want to point it out in the midst of in the context of what we've been saying in all of these classes, and that is being known of God. And then coming to know as we are known. And the being known of God is defined within the eternal context of a covenant made with a son, made with the seed. Now, so he says here, now I'm going to read this out of the King James. No, I'm not going to read that King James. I'm going to read it out of the Weiss translation. I like it better. Colossians 3:1. In view of the fact, therefore, that you were raised with Christ. Now, first of all, if you look at the word risen with Christ, as it said in the King James, it's important to note that it doesn't mean raised in addition to Christ. Remember, all of this has been premised upon the singleness of God's view, the singularity, the exclusivity of our salvation, and all of that. Now, it is talking about your soul being in union or joined to the risen one. And you look at a lot of word studies will word it that way. It is being in union or in joined together with the risen one. And I like that better than trying to be raised also or raised in addition to. That's not what it means at all. So since you are joined to or in union with the risen one, why is that important? Why do I point that out? Because we've been talking in the previous classes about that this one was declared to be the Son of God by the resurrection. The risen one is declared or made known, presented, manifestly presented by God as the Son. And that is so by the resurrection. And we're going to talk about that in a moment too, just pointing back to a couple of things we've talked about in the past. So, in view of the fact that you are raised with Christ, the things above be constantly seeking where Christ is, on the right hand of God, seated. The things above be constantly setting your heart upon or your mind upon, not the things on the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Now I want to stop there, because this presents to us something I want to point out, and that is a fellowship. This is a fellowship being described here between the Father and the Son. Your life is hidden with Christ in God. It is secured in a reality that cannot be known by man, perceived by man, touched by man. It is secured. It is hidden. It is kept, you could say. And I want you to understand that. And that's why the context around this verse is so important. And these are the things I've been trying to point out through these classes, all of these classes. When we are ignorant, and this is what the first verses we dealt with, Galatians 4:9, having known God, or rather being known of God, why do you desire to go back into bondage? The desire is not to go back into bondage. The desire is to achieve the result that those things promised them, like circumcision, external righteousness. You do that being ignorant of God's knowing with regard to you. You desire it not because you want to be in bondage. You desire it because there is a promise attached to the deception. And one of the things Paul says in Romans 7 was that sin that was in him took occasion, which is a military statement. It's almost like it took that opportunity in looking at the law, reading the law, understanding the law, the sin that was in him, that's the sin, the law that was in his members, the law that the sin that governed him as a Adamic man, took occasion in the law and deceived him. What does that mean? The law didn't deceive him. The sin that was in him deceived him by occasion of the law. What does that mean? That the lust of his flesh, the desire, and this was not lust after anything bad, this was a desire, a lust in his heart to be like God or to be righteous and to be holy. The problem is, it was a desire to be holy apart from the one of whom the law speaks. Trying to apply the law to a life it was never testifying of. So the law did not deceive him. The sin that was observing the law deceived him and said, we can do that. We can be that. We can fulfill that testimony. Why is such a desire in the heart of man? Because it's a desire that God has put in the heart of man for righteousness, for holiness, for purity. But because we're ignorant of where all of that reality is defined, we try to define it in ourselves. We are hungry for a relationship with God that is perfect and unchangeable. We are hungry for a continuity of fellowship with God. But because we are ignorant of the one who is the continuity of relationship, We will define it or attempt to see it or evidence it in ourselves. So they desire the bondage because there is a promise attached to it. And the promise is deception. The promise is you will be holy, you will be righteous, you will be good, God will look at you and He will relate to you because of how well you're doing. All of those things. But God's knowing. I love how Paul says it. God is not mocked. God is not mocked. He knows the difference between Ishmael and Isaac. He's not made a fool of. He knows the difference between death and life. We may be calling death life and life death, but He knows the difference. The discernment of God is always at work because His discernment is that He has one who has always occupied His view. And that one defines something that the natural faculties will never observe and never understand. It's an unseen, hidden fellowship, an unseen, hidden, secure, and certain reality. And because we can't see it here, out here, we try to produce it where we can. And that's why the context, you have this reality of being risen with Christ, and the things that are above, and the life that is hidden with Christ in God. You have all of that in juxtaposition to the deception of chapter 2, where these men are taking the shadows that spoke of one single body, one single man, one single person, and they are applying the shadows to themselves to try to establish a relationship that they do not comprehend. You see that? They're trying to make outwardly manifest what is hidden from the natural faculties. Your salvation is hidden until you see Him. Don't try to produce it. Set your heart on that which is above. That which is setting your heart on that which is on the earth is not about drinking alcohol, watching TV too much, doing too much of those bad things. It's not about that. You don't have to throw your iPads and iPods away. It's not about that. Setting your affection on that which is on the earth is trying to find an earthly evidence of a heavenly reality. Trying to find manifested and established and evidenced in the earth by your righteous deeds or your zealous acts what is only defined in a reality that has to be revealed in the face of Jesus Christ. That's setting your affection on that which is above. That's trying to find in the earthly man who is, in the man of the earth who is earthy, what is only found in the Lord from heaven. And most of us do that. Why? Because we are ignorant of the hidden reality, so we're trying to find what is hidden in things that can be seen. And that's why Paul here in Colossians 2 says they're intruding into the things they have seen. What have they seen? They've seen the shadows. They've seen the things of the law. They've seen the outward things of that religious system. And they are boasting in that, puffed up with their vain minds, their vain imaginations, because they believe that in implementing those shadowy things, in intruding or stepping into a shadow that your body did not cast, they are somehow achieving a standing, a relation to God that is acceptable. And Paul is saying that is absolutely contrary to reality. The reality is hidden with Christ in God. The reality of your life is hidden with Christ in God. You're going to try to save your life in these things. You're trying to save your life, what you assume to be your life, in these outward evidences of righteousness. Because you're ignorant of what cannot be seen in that way, cannot be known in that way. And I'm telling you, the uncertainty of most hearts when it comes to salvation has to do with this very thing. Most people define the certainty of relationship with God by what your eye can see, how well you're doing. And basically, it's how well they can assess your doing by looking at your activities or lack thereof. When the certainty, the security is fixed and settled in a relationship that is unbreakable, unchangeable, but it is where your natural faculties will never penetrate. The security of the reality you have tried to find in the earth in religion must be revealed in your soul or it will never be known. But it's settled, it's fixed, it's secured, it's the anchor that Hebrews talks about, the anchor of the soul that reaches in the veil. That means it reaches in and it grabs hold and it's anchored there eternally, fixed forever. Who is that? That's the one who stands in the Holy of Holies, the anchor of the soul. The high priest who is the side of God standing there in his own intrinsic perfection before the Father. He's the gaze of the Father's heart, and in his presence God knows the whole of a people and defines an entire nation in the face of one man. In the presence of one man. That's an anchor. That's something sure, fixed, that'll never move. But it's also a reality that must be revealed. Or else you're still on the roller coaster ride of desiring a relationship without knowing it's already settled. And it doesn't become an affection of your heart set to know Him. It becomes a lust of your flesh to be Him. Or to be what only He is. Or to obtain by God an inheritance that belongs to only one Son. Now, the fact that they go to the law is absurd. But it's because they did not know the hidden reality, the hidden wisdom of God that was hidden in the law. That was presented in the law. We've talked about it in these classes, that the law kept them. It clothed them with a testimony of His Son. And He had to do that. He had to clothe them in a testimony of His Son so that He could relate to them at all. Now this is a testimony. In order for God to relate to them or have relation to them at all, He had to clothe them with His Son. That was what the law was. It was a testimony of a Son. It was a testimony of one. That's why the shadow is so important, because a shadow can only have one source, and the shadow can only have one fulfillment. And if the law is a shadow, then there has to be one body that casts that shadow, meaning there's only one body, one person that can fulfill it. And that one is in you. And it settles what was testimony under the law. It settles the fact that God's relationship to us, as it was in the testimony, God's relation to them was fixed upon the reality that He clothed them with the garment of His Son. Now, for us, it is the reality that that Son that the law testified of now lives in us as the life of which it spoke, as the fullness that was its aim. Well, yeah, let's bring these two together. John chapter 14. Verse 2. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, you may be also." Now, I want to talk about this for a second, the Father's house and the place He prepared. The Father's house is very important. Let me look at some words here. The word "where I am," the phrase "where I am." No, I'm sorry, it's not the phrase "where I am." It's prepare a place, a place. He will prepare a place. I will go and prepare a place for you. And we know He went to the cross. The cross was that preparation for a place for us. Now, here's what I want you to understand. The word "place" there is really important. It may be insignificant to some when they read it, but you look at it, it means a place or a spot, the Strong says, that is limited by occupancy or by the occupant. In other words, what defines the place is the one who occupies the place. Now, just keep that in mind. So we need to see the place prepared is limited, which can also be said defined and measured by its occupant. You see, go to prepare a place for you that where I am. I am is the limiting measurement of the place. Meaning He measures the there-ness, if that's a word, our there-ness. He measures our there-ness, because if He's not there, there is no there to be. If He does not define and make reality, relationship, there's no relationship for you. There's no standing before God except He be the one who stands in the presence of God for us. Again, because it was never about many, but unto thy seed who is Christ. The Jews desired to be many that God called sons. And even in the testimony they represented in the earth, God saw them as "Israel is my son." He didn't see them as many. He saw them as a testimony of one. So this does not talk about Him coming and receive a bunch of people and we're all going to the house of God. We're all going to be in the Father's house. That is not. Remember, there is a limitation to this place, and it is the limitation of who occupies it. Now, chapter 8 of John. And I think this is verse 34. Jesus answered, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, whosoever committeth sin is the servant of sin. And the servant abideth not in the house forever, but the Son," that's in capital letter, capital S, "the Son abideth," continues, "is perpetually the resident of the house forever. So if the Son therefore make you free, you can be free, you are free indeed. The servant of sin is not in this thing that what disqualifies. Well, it's the same thing that disqualified Ishmael. He wasn't Isaac. It disqualified Ishmael from the receiving of the inheritance because Isaac was the seed of promise. Isaac was the son whose right it was, or who had right to the possession of the inheritance of the household. But the servant of sin who has no right to be, to remain or abide in the house, is not merely because you do sinful things on a constant basis. It is actually speaking of the man that is under the bondage of that nature, a soul that is in subjection to the man of sin. It's talking about a man, not a bunch of people that do bad stuff, but a man who is disqualified from right to the house, who has no place in the house, who has no part in the inheritance. Remember, the place prepared is a place that is limited by the occupant. Who is the occupant? Who truly occupies this house? Who has right to occupy this house by covenant and inheritance? It's not us. See? This sounds so... See, this is so singular that it infuriates most people. What about us? Ask Korah. Ask Korah, what about us? Aren't we all holy? There is one who shall stand before me. There is one fruitful branch that is remaining in the holiest as my view of the whole. Because he defines in my sight what you could never define in my sight. He is in my sight what you will never be. You better hope that the scope of his view is directly and forever fixed upon his son, or you have no hope. And I have no hope of a secured salvation, a secured fellowship, unless he secures it in his very presence before the Father, as in his very being, in his very in his life. He secures that in the sight of God, and he is the securing of that in me. The only time there is true ignorance and insecurity is when my soul is seeing an object that is in contradiction to the one that occupies the Father's view. In other words, when I'm seeing me and not his son. When I'm trying to define God's knowing in me and not his son. And we'll see that when we look at what the word hidden really means here in Colossians 3. But look, the Son alone can abide in the house forever. See, this was Paul's dilemma in Romans 7. It was that servant of sin. John 8, I wrote this. John 8, 34, 36 is a matter of transient relationship that is subject to cessation in opposition to a fixed relationship that is covenantal and given by promise to one son. You see, as long as I'm the one in view, the slave, the one that is slave to sin, because that's not what I do, that's who I am. As long as that's the slavery that I'm in, and I'm not found in him, crucified, found in him, having nothing of my own. If that is not the comprehension of my heart, I'm bringing myself to the table and trying to establish and define and measure relationship with God in myself. And as long as that's the case, it is transient. It comes, it goes. It gets better, it gets worse. It's up and down. It's not fixed. It is not a continuity of relationship. It is confusion. And it is turmoil. And your heart will be fixed to and cry out for, O wretched man that I am. And the whole time God's view was not the wretched man, but the new man. The son of his love. Who in your soul right now secures a relationship of which you are ignorant. So you go about to establish something yourself. You see, the beautiful picture of this and what it means with hidden with Christ in God, it points back to what we've already dealt with and drew on the board in earlier classes, and that's the high priest. It's one man goes behind the veil, goes into the heaven itself, as Hebrews describes it, and settles the issue. He settles the matter in His presence. And it's settled in the sight of God, in this one man. Atonement, relationship with the people, forgiveness, all of it settled by the presence of one perfect, righteous, holy one who is there with holiness on His head and clothed with righteousness, the white linen garments, and He stands there as the view of the Father, and all is well. But in the midst of that glorious understanding that is bound in heaven, that is fixed in heaven, those who are outside, those, there is a veil that hides that reality. There's not a veil on the high priest. There is a veil on the people. There is a veil that hides them from seeing their salvation, that keeps them out, that blocks their view of the security of their salvation. Because why? Not because it's not secure or finished. Not because the high priest has not settled the matter. No, that's not why, but because they haven't seen Him. They can't see Him. There is a veil, and it's the veil that's on our heart. It's the veil of flesh by which we filter all spiritual things by looking at ourselves. When the veil of flesh is removed, when our heart turns to gaze upon His face and sets our affection on that which is above, not that which is on the earth, then the veil that is done away in Christ can be taken away from our hearts, and in such a reality we can see salvation secured in one. And see, in the testimony, that's what He does. He is secured, and that's one reason why, and that's why I said, you know, when we're ignorant of what is settled in heaven, that thing that is hidden in a fellowship between the Father and the Son, and secured in our soul because such a fellowship has come into us, crying, Abba, Father. Ignorance of that will lead us to desire to be, to become, to establish a relationship with God. And we'll utilize whatever means religion has given us or put at our disposal. We'll utilize it all. We'll do everything we can. But that is the state of ignorance. That's the result of ignorance of a hidden reality. Hidden, not because God's trying to keep it from you, but because it demands Him revealing it in you. You'll never see it manifested until you see it manifested in His revealed presence. And you may have people who say, well, man, you've got a great relationship with God. If they're looking at you to say that, they haven't seen your relationship with God, and neither have you. Your relationship with God is seen when He, who is your life, appears. But in ignorance of that, we go about to establish our own. That's why on the Day of Atonement, when the high priest is hidden from their view, but is in their midst the security of their atonement and the certainty of their relationship and salvation. It is a Sabbath. And they are not to do anything. They are required to wait on Him. to appear. So what does he do? Well, he fulfills Colossians chapter 3, or Colossians chapter 3 inwardly is a fulfillment of this type. We're going to see it played out here in this testimony of the high priest. After all things are settled and fixed and secured in the presence of the high priest, and he is accepted and known of God, and in the knowing of this one, the whole of the congregation are known. They still have no idea. The Jews who are required to wait have no clue, have no comprehension, because the veil still remains. Settled, yes it is, but the veil still remains. So, what does he do? He comes out, puts upon him again the garments of beauty and glory, and he shows himself to those who are waiting for his appearing. And he shows himself as an unveiled view of what was already established in heaven. A security that was already a reality in heaven. What was hidden from their view now appears in their sight, in the presence of one man. And that man is wearing a breastplate of judgment. And the judgment is not for God to see, because he didn't wear it in the Holy of Holies. He wears it when the people see him. So when the people see him, the judgment that comes in their heart is just this: I have no relation to God except this one. I have no standing with God except this one. The security that was hidden from my view is defined in one man and not me. It is not I, but him. You see that? That's the reality of your salvation, and that's a secured reality whether you see it or not if you're born again. But what makes your soul a participant, capable of enjoying such security and living in the joy of such a secure reality? It's seeing him. It's his appearing. And that's what happens in Colossians chapter 3 verse 4. When he who is our life, that's the life hidden. It's not your life separate from him. The life hidden is him. The righteousness hidden is him. The relation to God hidden is him. And when he appears, you shall also appear. That's not separate from him. It is the one who is your life unto God, the one who is your righteousness, appears as your righteousness. Appears as your only righteousness. And then you say, as Paul said, after encountering such an appearing, I desire to have nothing of my own. No righteousness of my own, nothing except the righteousness that comes by faith, and that is beholding him. Knowing him as everything he is and is made unto me. That is what reality appearing does in me. In realization, not in reality, but in realization. It's culminated in his presence in the sight of God. But it's a life that's already secure. It's a fellowship that's already secured. In your ignorance, you tried to secure it in other ways and by other means, but he has always been the certainty of it. In John chapter 14, we're going to go down to verse 19. Remember first, I go to prepare a place for you. I come again, receive you, that where I am, you may be also. It's the same also as in Colossians 3. To the same measure. I define your state. I am the measurement of your state. If there's any state of being that you possess, I measure and define it. It's nothing outside of me, nothing apart from me. And then, Verse 19 of chapter 14. This is from the New American Standard. After a little while, the world would no longer see me, but you will see me. Because I live, you will live also. That goes directly to the high priest too. Because I live. There was always concern whether he would die in the Holy of Holies. Whether the high priest would die in the Holy of Holies. Always concerned, would he be perfect enough? That is why the wonderful thing about this reality in the new covenant is spelled out in Hebrews and is the very beginning statement of John 17. Because the Son is the high priest. And he is the only high priest that's ever existed on this earth and ever existed in this universe that could utter these words in certainty of relationship and covenant and inheritance as the one whose right it was to possess all spiritual things and have bestowed upon him the fullness of God. And he could say in John 17, as no other high priest could, Father. That secures it. He has made the Son high priest. Because I live, you will live also. In that day. What day? The day the Spirit of truth makes known the truth. The day he appears, who is our life. The day of his Spirit making known reality in our soul. That day. And in that day we will know. Here is the knowing as we are known. Here is the one who occupies and has right to eternally abide in the Father's house. Being made known in me as my life. As my salvation. As all things of spiritual reality. The anchor, the security. In that day you will know. This is when the continuity of relationship is made known in you. I am in my Father. That's the security of it. I am in my Father. That secures it. That's the hidden relationship of Colossians 3. You are in me, and I am in you. You know a relationship. You know an eternally settled, fixed, perfect, unchangeable relationship. And in the day of his appearing, the day your soul gazes upon him, who is the way, the truth, and the life, who is the door into the Father's house. Now you remember we dealt with this in John 10:15, where he says, as the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. The laying down of his life for the sheep was to be the door of the sheep into a fellowship of rest. He's the door into the house. Into the Father's house. But again, it's not an open door where everybody gets their part of the house and he's got a lot of rooms and we can all fit in there. No, one and one alone limits and measures this house. There's only one Son who has right to this house, and you're found in that Son or you're not found. You have relation to God in that Son or you have no relation to God at all. He defines the there-ness of your soul, or you're not there. John 10 was in the context of I am the door. But that door has blood and it permits only one son to remain within the confines of that house. So in that day you will know I am. And that will determine and define and measure your relationship to the Father. Your relationship with God is that I am your relationship to God. I am in the Father. You are in me. And I am in you. The security of the reality must be revealed in the soul. There must be the day where you know. It's when the day arises, the day star arises, and the new day that is defined in this perfect sun shines forth in our hearts. And we see the one who was hidden from our view, the one fellowship that was always hidden from our view. And then in that day of His appearing, He appears as our life. He appears as the righteousness. He appears as the wisdom of God in that He has made unto us all things. And in that appearing, we are made to know a salvation that is already determined, already measured, already evidenced in the sight of God, already perfect, unchanged and unchangeable. But we see it defined in one Son and not in ourselves. It is when the hidden reality that secures us eternally becomes the realized and apprehended reality inwardly. That is what it is to know as we are known. It is Him defining in our hearts what He already defines in the sight of God and what He already secures because His presence in us. All right, we'll stop there. I trust this has been a series that you've enjoyed. I'm sure there is a much more comprehensive way we could have went about this and described throughout these sessions. But I've desired to share with you what is at work in my heart with regard to this reality.